All right. Let's take our seats. She probably wouldn't want me to do this, but our sister AMI missionary, Kate Moon, is actually visiting with us this weekend. Some of the college students got to hear from her this Friday. I'm sure you were blessed. Those of you who haven't had a chance to say hi, please do that after the service. There's a pastor by the name of Dave Runyon who has co-written a book called The Art of Neighboring. It's a book we've talked about before, and I know that a couple of our microchurches have actually read it together and super blessed by it. But I wanted to kind of reintroduce the book to all of you and to use it as the basis for a sermon series that we'll be doing for the next 4 weeks. We want to talk about neighboring. We want to talk today about how to love our neighbors, and I'm really excited about the journey that God is going to take us on. Dave Runyon says that the inspiration for the book was when a group of pastors, church leaders, got together to think about and pray about how to care for their community, how they were thinking, you know, how do we make our community a better place? Because as believers, we ought to want that to happen. And so they met with the mayor of the city that they were in, and they asked the mayor, what does our city need the most? What is your dream for it? If you could wave a magic wand and create one change, what would it be? And the mayor said this. Well, it's interesting that you ask. It's embarrassingly simple, actually, to tell you the truth. The biggest single factor by far that helps a city flourish is when there's a sufficient number of really good neighbors. The biggest difference the biggest difference maker for a city is good neighbors and good neighborhoods. When people do something just as simple as caring for their neighbors, he said, all kinds of things happen. He explained, when neighbors care, the elderly are watched out for. At-risk young people stop being so at risk. Crime actually goes way down. Volunteering goes way up. Odd things like people begin to take better care of their homes and better care of their yards. And so actually property values rise, and isolated people are less lonely. And he said most of the problems that we could have would be eliminated or greatly reduced if our city just had enough good neighbors. He went on to explain, people are always telling me, oh, you should start this program, you ought to start that program. And sometimes we try. We said, inevitably, the funding goes down, and we're often not able to find good people to lead those programs. And it turns out their relationships always trump programs. So if churches really were serious about wanting to make a difference in our community, he said, the best thing I think you could do, personal opinion, would be to start a kind of neighboring movement. Now, this is a mayor talking to a bunch of pastors and church leaders, right? Is there something in the Bible about neighbors? Did Jesus have something to say about neighboring? You know, the Bible, when it says, love your neighbor, is it possible that it actually has to do something with your neighbor? Is it possible that Jesus has actually thought this through, that he's actually given us the most strategic proposal in human history to actually have an impact in our world? It seems to me, if I remember it right, that this idea that you ought to love your neighbor is actually kind of significant to Jesus. It's not like subtle point that he's making. It's not low down on the priority list. He gave it quite a bit of airtime. One time, a religious leader asked him, he was hoping to catch him out, but he asked him, teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? And of course, in Israel, they loved the law. They revered the Torah. They put all the many laws, you know, on the sort of the same plane. And he wanted to know, which do you think is the most important? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your mind, with all your soul and with all your mind. Now, that would have been considered a very good answer for a rabbi. It was taken from what was considered the most sacred text in all of Israel. It comes from the Old Testament book called Deuteronomy, the 6th chapter, the 4th verse, which says, hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. Him shall you love with all your heart and with all your soul and all your strength. That was actually the first prayer a child in Israel would memorize. They had a name for it. Does anyone know what it is? It's called the Shema. I think I heard someone say it. The Shema, which is the Hebrew word for hear, which is the first word in that text. Hear, O Israel. Shema, O Israel. The Lord your God, the Lord is one. There's just one God. He made everything. You ought to love him for everything that you're worth. That's a good answer. When Jesus says that, everyone would say, oh, yeah, he's a good rabbi, right? That's a good answer. But then Jesus does something quite unexpected, something staggering, really. He amends it, right? He says to the guy, and the second commandment is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Like, what do you mean, a second? The guy didn't ask for two. He asked for the greatest. Well, Jesus says the second is just like it. The second is just as important. The second flows out of it. In fact, all the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Now, I think we can miss how much this would have surprised his hearers, because who has the authority to amend the Shema? I don't know if this is the best example, but if we were to gather, you know, back in our kindergarten days, elementary school days, to recite the Pledge of Allegiance, right? The words are up there to guide us, and we said, you know, I pledge allegiance to the flag, you know, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, especially for Boston, right? So I'd be like, hey, you can't add that part, right? We don't have the power to amend the pledge. It's the pledge. You don't get to add words to it. No one should be able to amend and add words to the Shema, but Jesus does. Why does he? What is he up to? There's something really important to him. There's this theme in Judaism, and of course, Jesus was Jewish. That theme was always present, but it's always also in danger of being lost, which is the notion that love for God and love for people are actually inextricably tied together, right? In fact, you cannot love God but not love people, right? And Jesus, in this act of authority and brilliance, weds these two back together in a way that the world actually is going to be revolutionized by, and we remember these words still today. Love is what your life is all about. And if you do not love people, then you cannot love God. Jesus quoted this not once, not twice, 8 times in the Gospels. He said this so often that it's come to be known as the Great Commandment, right? The Great Commandment. 2,000 years later, the Great Commandment, we know these verses, right? John Ortberg said this, you cannot succeed at life and fail at love. And you cannot fail at life if you succeed at love. Love is what your life is all about. Now, it's really important to understand what the Bible means when it's talking about loving our neighbors, because there's a lot of confusion today about what exactly love is. Love is not a sentimental thing, really, in the Bible. There's nothing soft about it. Here's one definition, which I think is very simple, very concrete. To love your neighbor is to intend their good. Okay? To love your neighbor, to love somebody, is to intend their good as God wills good, as God defines good. Okay? Paul puts it like this. The whole law, the commandments, all the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, all the other commands, right, are fulfilled in this one word, love your neighbor as yourself. Because love does no harm to a neighbor, does not steal, does not covet. Love doesn't do that. Love is the fulfillment of the law. Love does no harm, or put more positively, love seeks good for the neighbor. Right? Love always seeks good for the one that I love as God defines good. Okay? Love is the will to good. That's what love is. Love is not desire. Now, our culture can get quite confused about this, especially around romantic love. But love is not the same thing as desiring somebody, right? Just thinking something is really beautiful or great, right? I desire a lot of things that I don't intend good for. There's a place that sells these little pastries called Krispy Kreme. Anybody been to a Krispy Kreme recently? Sadly, we don't have any in Boston. You know, when the light goes on that tells you that there's going to be fresh donuts that are coming right out, it is the greatest proof for the existence of God that I know of. Now, I love Krispy Kreme original glazed donuts. Not the other kinds, they're too sweet, right? But the Krispy Kreme original glaze, I love those donuts. But I do not will their good, right? I don't watch over them. I'm not working for them to realize their potential, to flourish. I'm not safeguarding them. I just want to eat them, right? Love is not the same thing as desire. You can desire tremendously and not love at all. Right? You may want to possess, you may want to hold, you may want to consume. That's not love. And it happens in our world all the time. Love is also not the same thing as doing what somebody else wants me to do. Any parent, right, understands that very clearly. To love somebody is quite simple. It's very concrete. It's not mysterious. It's to will their good. As God defines their good. It's to want them to become their best selves as they were made to be. And if I really love them, I'm actually willing to expend energy in that direction. Jesus says you are to love your neighbor. Your neighbor. Not just the cause. Not just some abstract group of people, marginalized as they may be, conveniently located on the other side of the world, someplace really far away, so I don't actually have to be in contact with them. Jesus says, love your neighbor. Your neighbor is a real, flesh and blood, imperfect, difficult person that life brings you into contact with. Okay? It's a wonderful word, neighbor. It comes from a combination of two words. The old word nigh, to be nigh, to draw nigh, is to be close to somebody. Then bur is an old German or Dutch word, still used in South Africa. We see the remnants of that word in New York City, where we get the word burrow from. It means to dwell, right? Nigh bur, to dwell close. And I wanted to talk today about actually loving that person, right? Because what if we really got serious about this? Now, it is hard to do, harder to do in our day. You know, I was thinking about how neighborhoods, neighboring has changed since Jesus's day. We do live in a different kind of world. For one thing, in Jesus's day, there were no garage door openers. Garage door openers make your life as a neighbor, or it makes loving your neighbor harder because I just go into my garage, and the garage door closes behind me. You know, in Jesus' day, there was no electricity. People didn't live mostly inside of their walls. They lived outdoors with each other. Even 100 years ago, architects used to build houses with something called front porches. How many of you have lived in a house that has a front porch? Just a few hands, right? They were designed to promote neighboring, right? Neighborliness. Because you hang out on your front porch and you'd say, hi, neighbor, right? Around World War II, this feature in homes changed. We started creating spaces to live, like backyards that were hedged off, fenced off. Makes it all harder to know your neighbor, especially in an urban context. It takes much more intentionality to love our neighbor. And, you know, in the church, I don't think we've been teaching this very well. Dave Runyon mentions in his book another city official who made this comment. And he says it wasn't just her. It's been repeated by all the city officials they've talked to. This city manager put it this way. From the city's perspective, she was making this comment, observation. From the city's perspective, there isn't a noticeable difference in how Christians and non-Christians neighbor in our community. Ouch, right? So Mayors are telling us the greatest need of communities is great neighbors. City planners are telling us they see no difference in the neighboring patterns of Christians versus non-Christians. And Jesus said, the great commandment is to love God with everything that we have and then love our neighbor as ourself. So if we're trying to learn how to love somebody, who do you think as Christians we should work on learning to love? Right? Our neighbors. So how about we get really concrete on this? Because, you know, the idea when we come together to worship and listen to a message is not just to hear a kind of interesting talk about interesting ideas. We want to do stuff, right? We want to follow what Jesus taught. So we're going to get really concrete on this. Everybody, on your chair, attached to that little pen in your connection card, you have found this little, card, bunch of squares on it, right? Take out the pen. Get ready to write some stuff down. This is a representation. It's not perfect, but it's a representation of your neighborhood, of your apartment complex, whatever it is you live in. The middle square is you. That's where you live, right? And then there's somebody who lives to your left, somebody who lives to your right. There's somebody who lives across the street or across the hallway, right? To their left, to their right. Maybe you don't have anyone living behind you, but there's someone who lives beneath you or above you, right? Some people are like, I live in a corner lot, so, you know, this doesn't apply to me, right? Adapt, right? Adjust, okay? Work with me on this. So this is what you're going to do. If you are going to actually love these people, it helps to start by knowing their name, right? It gets hard to keep saying, hey, you, right? I love you, bro, right? At some point, right, having a name to attach is a good thing. So for a few seconds, let's just write down the names of all the adults who live in those squares, right? In the first row where it says A, right? Write down the names of all the adults. I know it's really small. You might have to squeeze them in, right? All the names that you know, all the names, all the apartments, all the houses that you can. Then once you've done that, if you know anything personal about them, in line B, right, write what you know. Like they have a hobby, right? They, you know where they came from, something like that. Something that you wouldn't just be able to tell from like observing them. Oh, they have a dog, right? Why? How do you know that? Well, because you saw them with a dog. No, like things, something that you would have actually had to talk to them about to learn, okay? And then the last row, you know, just in one word, just describe like how they might think about the big questions of life, right? Like, what are their dreams? Like, what do they believe in, right? Are they a Christian? Are they, you know, a Muslim? Are they Buddhist? Are they an atheist, right? Write down what you know. Okay. Some of you need more time, but I'm going to have you stop now. Question. How many of you, I need to see a strong showing of hands, were able to fill out the names of all the adults around you? Would you raise your hand? High. Very high. I only saw like two hands. Are there more? Okay. That's embarrassing. Dave Runyon said on average at churches, 10%, about 10% of people are able to do this. And then only 3% are able to, or sorry, 10% are able to fill out the names. 3%, just 3% are able to fill out the second row, like something about that person, right? In fact, they call this the chart of shame. Right? Because it's kind of convicting. I remember the first time I did this, I was like, wow, I have a lot of work to do around this because I can't remember any of their names. In fact, I always have to ask Sunny, what are their names again? Right? So again, When we come together, we're not just listening to a talk. We want to do what Jesus said we're supposed to do. So we're going to ask God to help us. And everybody's job this next month is to be able to fill out this card for every square. Amen? Right? And the idea is you actually have to go to them and talk to them. So don't just send out your spouse or your roommate or your housemate, right? We all have to do this. And I know that it will be harder for some of us than it'll be for others, right? I get that. Some of us are introverts. I'm an introvert. It's harder. It takes more energy. I also have this weird like thing where I can't remember people's names, right? It takes more work for me. It's draining. God knows that. God has compassion for us. Some of you are extroverts. This is just easier for you by nature. So don't get judgmental about the introverted folks. God knows that you're an extrovert. So God is going to judge you more severely than for those of us who are introverts, okay? All of us, find out names. Let's start by finding out their names, writing it down, and then what? Start praying for your neighbor. Okay, ask God to bless them, that they, you know, would, you just will good for them. To love somebody is to will their good, to want them to become the best person that they can be. That's at the heart of love. It's also why love is quite painful, right? Because a lot of times you love people, but they don't do what you want them to do. Like, you're not just desiring for them to make you happy or for them to be happy. You're willing their good. And that, you know, you have very little control over sometimes. So begin with prayer. God, would you bring your good into this person's life? Remember, Jesus taught us to pray, right? His central prayer was, your kingdom come. Your will be done. Your good and perfect will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So we ask this question, you know, quite frequently, but let me ask you again. What would it look like if God's will were to be done in your neighborhood? Let's make that the place where our prayers start. Your kingdom come, your range of your effective will, where everything is just as you want it to be. What would it look like if that were happening in my neighborhood? Okay? And I think there would be some really simple things that would be happening, right? Like the golden rule would start to happen, where people would start treating one another the way that they want to be treated. You know, people start to learn each other's names, get to know each other. We're friendlier to each other. We acknowledge one another, right? This is like, just imagine, like if that started happening, we'd be like, wow, something's happening here. Not rocket science. Right? You don't need a resume. You don't need to have gone to seminary to, you know, do this thing, right? You just get to know people, pray for them, will their good. There's a one day a year when people actually visit each other's homes and knock on doors and act like neighbors. It happened this week. What day was that? Did something happen? Halloween, right? Where we knock on each other's doors dressed in disguise so they don't know who we actually are, right? Well, Halloween is a great time for neighboring. In the past, I've gone out walking with my kids, walking with my neighbors. This year, I got to hand out candy to some little kids and not so little kids. And then after about half an hour, I handed off the job to Sunny because she needs to learn to love our neighbors too, right? But here's this weird idea. Let me just give you a weird idea. What if we stop by somebody's house even when it's not Halloween, right? What if we were just asking God, would you make your kingdom come to my neighborhood and just begin with me? We can all do this. We can all pray. We can all learn names. Another simple thing. We can start trying to bear with our neighbors. Forgive them when it's needed. You know, it's interesting. The initial command to love our neighbor in the Old Testament is in the book of Leviticus. And this is how it's written, okay? You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. That's God saying, I have spoken. This is the way. Some of you don't watch Star Wars, okay. But this is where it all started, right? It all started here. Has anyone had a neighbor who was hard to get along with? Someone who's kind of cranky, kind of demanding. Maybe they play their music too loud, or they complain about your mostly well-behaved dog, right? Or they say unkind things. Every neighborhood has a cranky, difficult person in it. And if you're looking around, your floor, your neighborhood, and you're like, oh, I don't know who that cranky, difficult person is, then it's probably you, right? I'm just saying, right? When neighbors annoy, how easy is it to forgive or be gracious? It's not easy. In fact, without God, it's almost impossible. Now, this is really important, right? This is why Jesus' great command ties these two things together. Love God as your greatest treasure. Love your neighbor as yourself, right? You cannot detach them because you cannot give what you do not have, right? If you've ever traveled with kids on a plane, there's that odd moment during the flight instructions when the flight attendant will say, before you put your that oxygen mask on your child's face to save their life, right? Put the mask on your face to save your life. And, your kid looks up at you like, really, Daddy? Really? Are you going to save yourself first before me? Like, why do they give that instruction? Oh, this is a really good reason, right? It's really hard to help somebody else when you're dead, right? So, you cannot give what you do not have. Sometimes I talk with people who will say something like, Jesus' moral instructions are great, right? I think he has amazing ethical teachings. He was a great teacher, and I think all people ought to hear or observe it. But I don't really think Jesus, knew what he was talking about in terms of how he viewed the rest of the world. Like, miracles aren't possible. I don't think there's a God who's personally involved. I don't think there is life after death. I don't believe all of that stuff. I don't believe he's the Son of God, but his ethical instructions are wonderful. Here's something really important to understand. Jesus's understanding of moral reality, these instructions, these commands, cannot be detached from his understanding of reality. His moral instructions flow out of his understanding of reality. And this is always true. The way we understand reality does determine the robustness of our understanding of moral reality and ethics, okay? And for Jesus, love was not just a nice value, right, to put up in your mission statement. Love is at the core of the person who created the universe, okay? And it's no coincidence that there are these instructions. Love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Because they're teaching that there is a God who loves and wants to be loved. And this was unique to Israel, right? There was no one else in the ancient world saying things like, Zeus is your God, therefore love your neighbor, right? Moloch is God, therefore love your neighbor. Power and oppression our reality, so love your neighbor, right? No, the message of Jesus begins with, right, you don't have to look out for yourself. Sermon on the Mount, blessed are you. Blessed are you, even if you're mourning, even if you're poor in spirit. Blessed are you if the world says you are unblessed because there's a God who made you and he loves you more than you can imagine. No matter what happens to you, pain, even death, it cannot separate you from that love. Not now, not for all eternity. Blessed are you. And it's out of that understanding, it's out of that reality that this commandment to love our neighbor flows. Because your neighbor is also cherished, loved by God. And that is the only foundation for human dignity that has ever really stuck. Every human being matters equally, not because they're all equally smart, because we're not, or equally attractive, we're not, I'm painfully aware of that, right? Or equally able, or equally anything else, but because we're all equally loved and cherished by a great God, the Creator God. That's why when you see a human being, no matter their IQ, no matter their background, no matter their job, what they do, right? Because we live in a world that was shaped, breathed in, created by God, we know that we ought to love them. Okay, that's where we start. John, the beloved disciple, Jesus' follower, said, "We love because he first loved us." Right? We can't give what we don't have. So we're going to learn names. We're going to pray. We're going to forgive when we need to forgive and actually maybe apologize when we need to apologize. And then we can start looking for small acts of service. You know, every year we get this white stuff that falls from the sky here in Boston. It blocks streets. It covers cars. And actually, out of that, great stories of neighborliness come. My neighbors and I would actually joke about how winter was like the main time where we would actually be neighbors. We'd all be hanging out there, shoveling snow, blowing snow together. So, this winter, buy a shovel if you don't already have one, right? Grab that shovel when it snows and just get out there. And you'll be like, hey, you want help shoveling out your car. It was 2015, I think, when we had so much snow in Boston that after a while, there was just nowhere to put the snow. And there was like this like 10, 12 like foot of walls of snow in front of the Paradise. And actually, after one snowy weekend, the staff kind of desperately asked us if we might be able to send some people to help them shovel, you know, in front. And they were shocked and delighted when over a dozen brothers, I think mostly from BU, showed up and turned that 12-foot wall of snow into like a 20-foot wall of snow. And after that winter, like that, what would have taken like 24 hours for the staff, like three or four of them to do, it was reduced dramatically. And after that winter, we had a lot of credit with the Paradise Rock Club built up. Like they would, like any request that we'd have, they'd be like, oh, sure, of course, we love you guys. Since then, we haven't had that kind of snow. So our credit has decreased. But what if, you know, we didn't wait for a snowstorm to just act in servant-like love. Here's another way to connect with your neighbor. We used to do this all the time. You can go knock on the door and borrow something. Hi, I was just baking some cookies and I realized I don't have enough flour. Could I borrow a cup of flour? Right? Or a cup of sugar or a cup of milk or whatever it is, right? Neighbors actually used to do that all the time. Hey, neighbor, like, oh, I'm doing this home improvement project and I realize I don't have this tool. Would you happen to have that tool, right? And then, of course, you are willing to lend those if you have them afterwards. Now we just, like, we're so self-sufficient. We just go down to the store, you know, and buy it, what we need. But the Bible is so full of these like wonderful instructions to make loving our neighbor concrete, right? The Hebrew mind was very concrete that way. So Proverbs says this, do not say to your neighbor, go and come again, right? Tomorrow I will give it. As in like, not right now, right? When you have it with you. You have the cup of sugar and you're like, oh no, sorry, I don't have a cup of sugar, right? No, just love your neighbor. If you have it, lend it or give it. The Bible says neighbors care about what belongs to one another. Also from the book of Proverbs, it is a sin to despise one's neighbor, but blessed is the one who is kind to the needy. Everyone has needs, right? One of the ways that we despise people is just by withdrawing from them, not being attentive to those needs. But if you follow Jesus, we don't withdraw. We actually start moving towards. Now, one way to do that is just by asking people questions, right? Such a simple thing to do. When did you move here? Where did you grow up? What brought you out here, right? What do you do for a living? How much is your house worth? You know, just simple questions like that, just seeing if you're paying attention, right? If it's a couple, you might ask, like, how did you meet, right? What a great conversation starter. And there's always a story there, fun question. How did you guys meet each other? By the way, if it's a couple that isn't married and they're living together, you don't have to say to them, did you know you're living in sin, right? You can still just ask, how did you meet? Because Jesus didn't say perform behavior modification on your neighbor, right? He didn't say pronounce judgment on your neighbor. He said love your neighbor. So love them. Bake something. Bring it over to someone's house. Invite somebody over to watch a game. We're probably all watching the same game anyways, right? Notice somebody who has a need. Now, again, why do we do this? Because it's grounded in the heart of God. Jesus said these words a long time ago. They're often read at funerals. It gives us hope for where we're going. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. All right, kind of a sober question, but whose neighbor or whose neighborhood are you going to end up in? That would be Jesus. Jesus's neighborhood. And when you move in, Jesus isn't going to say, oh, there goes the neighborhood, right? He can say, welcome, neighbor. Right? That's what the incarnation was about. God wanted to be our neighbor. He came and he tabernacled. He dwelled among us. He neighbored among us. Jesus says, in my Father's house, there are many rooms. We don't know how many, but they're not full yet. Right? He wants more. I was thinking about this. Pastor Mike talked last week about how God cares about numbers. Right? God cares about numbers because each number represents a person, a soul that he loves. And, you know, let's just think some numbers. We have at least 200 households in our church, those who consider this their church home. What if these household units, each of us, did what Jesus said to do, right? Love your neighbor. What if we just did what Jesus said? You know, just conservatively, I would say, like, in every square, there are at least, you know, on average, like, two people, right? If it's, like, a dorm room, probably two people, maybe a triple, maybe they got a single, but an average two. If you're living, like, in an apartment complex, probably an average of three or four, right, in each apartment, right? So, you know, approximately 15 people, right, around us, around each of us, 200 households, 15 people around 3,000 people touched by someone who's just trying to do what Jesus said to do, right? That would be powerful. What if we were to do that? Let's pray.